Practical Work on Self, Chapter 4, Booby de Jour. Ordinary man is a slave to involuntary restless movements which prove that he has no authority over his biological machine. In observing the manifestation of our machines, we cannot help noticing that our machines become carried away with various involuntary projects, which is to say, squirming helplessly in their seats. Although the clarification of these ideas is valuable, the jokes and stories are also part of our work and can be useful, especially when we know much more and we can see that they not only tell an amusing story in relation to our perception of this world, but that they also refer to events in an entirely different dimension. A mechanical human being looks like an utterly helpless booby. Why? Because the non-phenomenal self is a slave to the machine, and the machine is a slave to the motor centrum's continual output, resulting in the most bizarre involuntary restless movements. These pathetic spasmodic twitchings are signs to anyone who has eyes to see that we have no authority over our own organic machine. If we were able to observe impartially these restless manifestations in the workings of our own biological machine, we could perhaps accumulate real, non-fantastic data about the inner and outer activities of the machine, and even perhaps someday apply this otherwise wasted negative force for our own work toward awakening of the machine. When material is offered which can be used for our observation of the machine, we should learn to use it to observe the machine impartially, without shame. Embarrassment about the machine's activities indicate deep identification with the machine. Impartial observing means we must be prepared to see ourselves as others see us, from outside, not so subjectively. Eventually, we will undoubtedly see many psychological and emotional features about the machine which are not at all pleasing and may even be horrifying to our observing selves. Unconscious actions continually irritate and annoy others, and even if they're too asleep themselves to know exactly the cause of their displeasure, they feel an immediate, automatic reflex of hatred toward these manifestations. If we believe even for a moment that our postures and manifestations are self-directed and wholly arbitrary, we are steeped in a self-induced hypnotic illusion. We could analyze the manifestations of the machine, and if we could analyze them sincerely and impartially, we could see how really limited they are, and that our entire repertoire of motor centrum manifestations consists, without exception, of habitual postures and involuntary spasmodic semi-faintings from one mechanicality of the machine to another. If we can observe the biological machine as a stranger to ourselves, we should be able to see its activities in an impartial light. We are never really able to observe the smallest fractions of mental and motor centrum activities of the machine until we've observed for a very long time and can predict what the machine is likely to do each day. Our observations will become more refined as we come to know the machine more and more intimately. As it is, we have only the most vague general impression of the machine and cannot know from this general impressionistic view anything of real value about its life and activities. In our observation of the biological machine for the purpose of this exercise, we are particularly interested in those manifestations which indicate that the machine is restless and that our attention has begun to wander, was distracted or seduced, or the machine's will to sleep is greater than our own will to awaken it. We should, for the moment, confine our observations to these ordinary restless mechanicalities, which we can call our booby de jour. Of course, we all know that even if we had the strength of 10, we could not possibly contain or get or discontinue even 2 or 3 of the smaller, less forceful mechanicalities. The machine is too subtle, and the will of the non-phenomenal self is, as yet, non-existent. The resulting sensations of frustration and the remorse engendered by our utter failure to influence the machine even slightly can serve as the negative force necessary for the awakening of the machine. Then we can observe the biological machine in its awakened state and at the same time observe real data about this stranger in which we're carried about all day just like a newborn baby in a self-propelled perambulator. The effort which we expend in achieving some form of impartiality in the observation of the biological machine is much more important than anything in particular which we happen to observe in the course of events. In general, each typicality of human machine is completely unique in its repertoire of mechanicalities. One typicality will manifest as do all others of the same typicality. To really be able to observe the inner workings and organization of the biological machine, one must be able to awaken the machine at will, which is to say, by the exertion of the will of the non-phenomenal source of attention over the will of the machine to remain asleep. The observation of the machine then contains the most important factor, the invoked presence of the source of attention. This presence, although subtle and seemingly powerless, is the precise factor which causes the machine to change from a pleasure machine into a transformational apparatus, according to the Heisenberg principle, the law which tells us that the act of observation seriously alters that which is being observed. At the same time, because the machine is awake during observation, the memory function of the higher mental apparatus will retain data obtained during the awakened state for later use in the course of voluntary evolution. Observations of the inner and outer activities of the machine should not be limited to the period during which we are still excited about it and wish to learn something new. We must learn to take these higher mental apparatus photographs of the biological machine at different times and in different states, not just of small details but whole actions, and in particular the spasmodic restless movements which we call fidgeting. We can use these stupid restless mechanicalities as centrums of gravity for the detailed observation of the activities of the biological machine. Later on, after a long period of this type of observation, we will observe the machine from an entirely new centrum of gravity, which will be the higher emotional apparatus, when we will learn something very different about the life of the machine. These mental photographs are sincerely collected by an impartial camera, and we have a sufficiently large number of observational samples to study over a long period of time. We're able to view the machine much less subjectively and can obtain a vivid picture of the biological machine, not just from moment to moment, but in the longer view, which will help us to understand our work with the machine in the eternal return. Because we're making these observations with the non-phenomenal source of attention and not just the ordinary mental apparatus of the machine, we have established a bridge across the barriers between the higher and lower mental apparatus. Our information will, in this way, survive the momentary life of ordinary memory. The observation of mechanicalities of the machine organizes our intention and attention and keeps us on guard, watchful for any sign of something unusual, which we can use for more advanced exercises of our will and subtle influence over the machine. We must come to understand that the machine is not a real being, and that we need not feel shame for its activities in sleep. But at the same time, we are responsible for allowing them to continue. It is our identification with the biological machine which provides the illusion that we ourselves play a part in life and that our part remains unalterable. Because, as we're in the beginning, we're utterly unable to exert our own will over the will of the biological machine. Because it is a machine and it has an unconscious will of its own, modified by its conditioning. The biological machine may say and do 1,000 stupid things which we would never do if given a choice. We notice helplessly that it becomes restless in one centrum, does something terribly self-destructive, and then to escape the consequences of its actions, shifts quickly to another centrum, then to another, and so it goes. These stupid, destructive, and wasteful little mechanicalities of the motor centrum should indicate to us, if we needed this additional demonstration, that the machine is definitely sleeping and that it is the motor centrum which is the source of the majority of our manifestations. After a long period of observation of the biological machine, we might become afraid of the machine. We might even come to feel that the machine is our deadliest enemy just because it spoils our life, systematically and predictably ruining any good impression we might like to make upon ourselves and others. How can we manifest the beauty of truth absolute when in the middle of the aesthetic crescendo, the biological machine unaccountably and without our permission happens to idly pick its nose in public? We may see ourselves chained to the habits, tastes, sympathies, and moods of the machine with which we have nothing whatever in common. And when the machine runs like clockwork, bearing our higher attention in the subtle sleep of routinization, it is even worse because we cannot see this sleep when everything is quiet on the outside. We will undoubtedly discover to our horror the real terror of the situation that our precious force for work is robbed by the continual foot-tapping, scratching, and fidgeting, after which, what remains for our own needs? We must somehow learn to stop the machine from flushing this precious energy rightfully belonging to us for our work right down the proverbial toilet. But, while we may feel gratitude for the biological machine because it brought us to the work, and we may even feel some mechanical sensations of nostalgia for our earlier innocent identification with the biological machine, which is to say, that mechanical Garden of Eden, which, by partaking of the fruit of knowledge, we are ejected. We must not allow ourselves to be carried away by the unconscious yearning for comfort to the degree that we seek refuge, even temporarily, from the evolutionary journey. In our beginning work, we must be able to accept that from now on we will have no place to rest our weary selves, no permanent home, no safe, secure pillow on which to lay our busily chattering heads. But how, in effect, can we begin to do this? Is there some practical way to ride herd on these mechanicalities, the booby manifestations of the machine? We can begin to exert our will upon the biological machine by voluntarizing what has become involuntary or automatic. Select one habitual mechanicality of the machine which you've observed over a long period of time, making certain that this same mechanicality appears often, at least several dozen times a day, each day. Now manifest this action intentionally, repeatedly over a long period of time, observing the machine. This period serves two primary purposes. First, to awaken it slightly as it falls under the spotlight of observation. And secondly, to see that it does not change from its usual automatic manifestations. When manifesting a particularly active state, if you happen to catch it in yourself, especially if it is very dramatic, suddenly shout, "Cut!" and stop the action like a film director. Then voluntarily Begin the action again, loudly shouting, "Lights, camera, action!" Repeat this several times for each dramatic manifestation until it becomes part of your voluntary. Now you are all movie directors for the remainder of your personal drama. Now then, lights, camera, action! Repeat this voluntary performance many times until you can authorize its appearance, in the sense of being an author of a story as well as allowing it to occur and its disappearance. Take the posture of a theater director of these voluntary performances with this manifestation. See the machine as an actor playing an artificial role. Take mastery, be firm, cut to a fine edge the obedience of the actor, then dismiss the character from the stage and use it only when you wish. Then choose another and follow the same procedure. Master these as you audition them one by one. This is a student's account of one example of the exercise as it actually occurred in a New York workshop in 1983. We met as a group in a Midtown restaurant which served as one of EJ's temporary offices in America. EJ had not yet arrived, and as the conversation ranged into the rarefied atmosphere of pure speculation, we all began to be swept away by the momentum. David had the presence of mind to see the opportunity and shout, "Cut!" very loudly, so loudly that everyone stopped what they were doing, including the cooks behind the counter. He rose to his feet and acted the part of Cecil DeMille, clapped his hands peremptorily and commanded, "Let's take that scene again. Places, everyone. Lights, camera, action." To our utter astonishment, the entire restaurant started up again at his command. He repeated this three more times, and finally, when he could not get away with it anymore, loudly exclaimed, "Print it, that's a take," and quietly resumed his seat. We couldn't believe how compliant everyone, ourselves and total strangers included, had been to these commands of his. EJ evidently had been sitting around the L-shaped corner during all of this. He clapped his hands and said, "Bravissimo, you had the good sense to stop just before they came to themselves, formed a mob, and lynched you." EJ also permitted us to call cuts when we caught each other asleep. If the manifestations were sufficiently dramatic, we would call for as many retakes as we felt the subject was able to endure.